Texas Talking. Oh, what was that that you said? Texas Talking. Oh, gonna hoop upside your head. Texas Talking. Tell me, who can you trust when Texas guys are when Texas guys love Texas Talking?
Hello, this is Sid Miller, Republican nominee for Texas Agriculture Commissioner. For a while, I thought the general election was going to get a little bit kinky. It looks like the only thing left that's kinky is Reeve Hamilton and the Tribcast crew. Now, onward to the general election.
Thank you. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for the final week of May. I believe that was a reference to the outcome of the Democratic runoff for Ag Commissioner, which we'll get to. But first, joining me is CEO and Editor-in-Chief Evan Smith.
Hello, Reeve. I've taken a break from making stew. That would also be
That's a Jim Hogan.
That's a Jim Hogan joke to be here. So,
executive editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
Another Ag Commissioner reference. Thank you, Ross.
And good one.
Editor.
Good one, Reeve.
Emily Ramshaw.
I don't want the word kinky to be used in this company any longer.
You mean the Tribune?
Yes.
What company?
This. The four of you. Three of you. And
actually,
Todd.
We were hoping Kinky would call in and sing you happy birthday.
It is Emily's birthday. Very exciting.
Singing is one skill that he has, unlike winning elections.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. So should we just quickly...
This was three for him, wasn't it? This is number three.
Yes.
So that's the magic number.
If you lose three times, that's it.
Chris has lost three. Kinky's lost three.
Kinky's lost four. He ran for Justice of the Peace in Kerrville.
In 86.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So... He already had his third.
He already overstayed his welcome.
So I guess should we just tick off...
The George Romney of Texas politics.
We're gonna run through the runoff election results, but since we've done the Democratic Ag Commissioner stuff, should we just quickly mention that?
We haven't done the Democratic Ag Commissioner
stuff. Well, so we've already dipped our toes into it.
Why don't we just talk about it? So in the Democratic Agriculture Commissioner runoff, Kinky Friedman lost pretty handily to Jim Hogan, who is a gentleman who did not campaign.
We're not even sure if he's a gentleman. We know so little about him.
He said if you want to know something about him, just Google him.
We've never seen him. We've only seen a picture.
And that's not true. He came to the office.
He came to the office.
When did he come to the office?
He showed up in the office.
Oh, that's when he creeped everybody out.
Evan.
He may have creeped you out.
No, I'm telling the story as it was told to somebody else.
Anyway,
he wouldn't have creeped me out. I like the guy.
He's in the office more than you are.
Close. He showed up with a ream
of
loose leaf.
Not raising money, Reeve.
He showed up with a ream
of
loose
leaf. Which Jim Hogan doesn't do.
He had a handwritten position paper that he wanted to offer us. And then he won the Democratic.
Is typing required here at the Texas Tribune? You got to type your position paper?
Look, his chicken scratch was a little better than yours.
I'm almost tempted to start this podcast over.
It's going really well. Yeah.
Anyway, he will be the Democratic nominee, and he's running against the intro here, Sid Miller, who defeated Tommy Merritt.
Always hard to beat an intro.
Doesn't get any easier from here. It's happy birthday.
It is your birthday, right?
So we are denied the Ted Nugent, Kinky Friedman
that I've been dreaming of
general election off.
I know.
You know, there's plenty here though. The top of the ticket races are going to be interesting, even if they're not. You know, even the ones that aren't competitive are going to be interesting. It's an interesting cast of characters for the most part.
Well, but in the case of Hogan, what'll be interesting is Hogan has managed to non-campaign. Right.
Right.
He's won this thing.
He spent $0.00.
And apparently did accept to come to this office, didn't leave Cleburne. So the question is, what will he do in the next four or five months?
You know, it's worked for statewide judges for years and years and years. Nobody knows who they are until they walk into the polling place and say, oh, that's a nice looking
name. He'll be the Marty Aikens candidate of this cycle. He'll get the same 42% as everybody else spending.
Well, if he doesn't do anything, that's going to be a good place to look for the baseline Democratic vote in the November election.
But interestingly, in this case, you know, the Democratic Party ended up endorsing Kinky and the...
did they really endorse
Kinky? After they
Kinky?
Campaigned against him
yes.
in the first round. They,
right.
they campaigned against both Keisha Rogers and Kinky Friedman in the first round saying he wasn't a real Republican and she was, you know, looking for the impeachment of the
now,
president.
Now, voters listened on the Keisha Rogers point.
Keisha Rogers was a U.S. Senate candidate who wanted to impeach Obama.
She's the LaRouche.
Footnote Hamilton over here.
Yes. Yeah. So voters listened to the Democratic Party in that case and came out and voted for David Alamil, who, you know, won overwhelmingly in last night's election.
He was the Senate candidate that didn't want to impeach Obama.
Right. There were just two of them.
Those were that was the main plank.
Well, no, John Cornyn may also fit in that same category, actually.
Good point. He wasn't running in this particular party's primary.
Right.
Yet, you know, on the other side, they did not listen on Kinky Friedman and went ahead and voted for the guy that nobody knew.
Well, they sort of listened. They just didn't listen after the wrong election.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Useful.
I think everybody's tired of Freedman's Act. I mean, you know, it's sort of it hasn't developed. He's, you know, he was he kind of came out this time and said, you know, I'm for legalizing pot. He didn't really campaign hard. He didn't really put on the show that he's put on in some of the previous races. And I think people looked at him and thought he was a jokey candidate.
Is it better for the Democrats to not have pot be a central plank of one of their statewide candidates?
I think he's probably a distraction from, you know, they want to run a serious race and see what their numbers. You know, they're trying to build some numbers. They've been stuck in the low 40s for a long time. They've lost. They've been completely beat in 9 consecutive election cycles. They haven't won a race since 1994, and they want to see what they can do. And Friedman doesn't advance that.
The short answer is that no matter who won that race, with the exception of probably Mike Collier, you're going to see Davis and Vandepute out on the campaign trail, but you're not going to see a group picture. You're not going to see a dream team picture because
John Cook and his guitar.
Because the two top candidates are really the marquee players here, and everybody else is sort of south of that. Collier is a serious guy. Mike Collier, Democratic candidate for comptroller, but
Steve Brown's a serious guy.
Steve Brown's a serious guy running for Railroad Commission. But the reality is they're not going to be viewed as a group. Whereas from the Republican perspective, you're going to hear a lot about the whole slate of them.
Well, that's actually sort of interesting. I mean, you know, if the charges and allegations about Paxton persist, then Abbott's got this interesting problem that nobody's had since Mark White was campaigning with Jim Maddox. It's sort of like you look around and you kind of go, is this a lawyer you would hire in your law firm?
Well, in fact, Wendy Davis's first tweet one of the first tweets on behalf of Wendy Davis last night was, when is the first time that Greg Abbott's going to campaign with Dan Patrick? They intend to make Dan Patrick a millstone around Abbott's neck if they can. And I'd say about that, Patrick has been underestimated since 2006. Keep underestimating him. The reality is, if you think running against Dan Patrick is going to win you the election in the fall, you very well may be too clever.
A lot of Republicans thought that the presidential campaign from Mitt Romney was the party running to the middle when it should have run to the right, and that's why they lost. And that part of the party has found their voice in Dan Patrick. We should run to the right. We should run with a true conservative Republican. And that's what the party will rally around. And that's exactly, I think a lot of people in the Republican side say, this is exactly what they ought to be doing.
And the Paxton Branch margin was as big as the Patrick Dewhurst margin, which means that Paxton is as much the standard bearer for that view.
Can we back up a little bit and explain,
get upset
explain
we're
to people
all over the place.
What we're talking about? We sort of buried the lead, which was really the Dan Patrick
the
sportscaster
from ESPN making a rare venture out of
his somebody
comfort
flipped
zone.
Up a TV graphic
it was,
last
I think
night
it was KHOU. We think it was KHOU.
Why can't we
Dan
find out
Patrick,
who it was?
The sportscaster up instead of Dan Patrick.
So Russ, can you just sort of give us a rundown of who won the Republican primary runoffs?
Yeah, so Dan Patrick beat David Dewhurst in the top race on the Republican side, lieutenant governor.
Beat is a generous description.
The attorney. Yeah, it is a generous description. In the attorney general's race, Dan Paxton beat
Ken Paxton.
Ken Paxton beat Dan Branch. There's too many Dans. We need to thin the. I guess we did thin the Dans a little bit last night. In the Agriculture Commission race, Sid Miller beat Tommy Merritt, two former House members who both lost their House districts. Voters have rejected both of them. Ryan Sitton beat Wayne Christian in the race for Railroad Commission. Ralph Hall was the first incumbent member of Congress to lose a race this year. He's a 91-year-old.
Since dinosaurs roamed the earth.
Right, exactly, since Adam had an even number of ribs.
By the way, he was also present for that.
Good reference,
he was there that day. So he lost
walking
to
around
John
without
Ratcliffe,
clothes on.
a former federal prosecutor up in northeast Texas. In an overlapping district, the other Hall won. Bob Hall beat Bob Duell by 300 votes out of about 36,000 casts.
It's our Dans and our Halls.
Right. It's probably a recount race, but I think that number will probably hold.
Do you acknowledge Sitton's a surprise?
Sitton was a bit of a surprise, although he clobbered Christian in Harris County. There was a big effort from a lot of the oil and gas lobby and from a lot of the energy people in Houston on Sitton's behalf. He beat Christian like 3-1 in Harris County, which, of course, is the biggest vote turnout, and Christian never recovered from it.
But he was the outlier in that Christian was viewed as part of the slate alongside Paxton,
right.
Patrick, and Miller. And Sitton also broke the record of newspaper editorial boards being the Sports Illustrated covers of Texas politics, right? Sitton got all the endorsements.
Right, and won anyway.
And ended up winning anyway, which is kind of amazing. Right.
So, I mean, does the oil and gas influence in Harris County explain a race that seemed to go against the narrative of, you know, the Tea Party favorites doing quite well on the top of the ballot last night?
Well, Sitton's not exactly Angela Davis.
I think they put a lot of money into mail and robocalls and slate cards in Harris County and really, really concentrated. You know, the numbers in that race in Harris County were significantly different from the numbers in the other Harris County races. Dan Patrick helped Harris County turnout.
Well, Merritt did well in Harris County, right?
Right. So, you know, we didn't call the Merritt-Miller race until late because Harris County was tighter than it was in the other races. It just looked a little
Let
hinky,
us also
it's
observe
a big vote
of,
total.
The, of the four.
It's also always the latest county. Thank you very much, Harris County Clerk.
What's that guy's name?
Stan Stannard.
Stan
Stannard. The of the four big races, Tommy Merritt, by a long shot, did the best of the losing candidates.
Right.
Which I don't know anybody would have predicted going into this.
I bet he is just running around bragging so much about that today.
Listen, you know what? He ran a much tighter race by a significant amount than the other guys. You got to say, well, take comfort in whatever you can, right?
So to finish this off real quick, Connie Burton, as probably expected, won the Tarrant County race to succeed Wendy Davis on the Republican side, beating Mark Shelton.
Who had previously lost to Wendy Davis.
Who had previously lost to
He's
Wendy Davis.
Dangerous Kinky Friedman territory.
Exactly,
right?
Getting close.
Burton will now face Libby Willis in that race. That's the only swing seat really left in the Texas Senate.
And it's about a plus, what, 15, 16?
It's a plus, yeah, it's,
something,
yeah, something
Republican
like that.
District it's particularly in a non-presidential
particularly
year.
In a midterm year, right. Yeah. So, and then in the House, everything flipped. So the Tea Party candidates won everything down through the Senate on the ballot. And then in the House, they went 2-7. And the establishment candidates, the Joe Strauss candidates, whatever you want to call them, won 5 of the 7 races that everybody was kind of watching in the House.
Just like John Ray versus T.J. Fabby.
Right.
So Shaheen was one of the Tea Party candidates who won, and the other was whom?
The other one that was endorsed by a lot of those groups was Mike Schofield against Ann Hodge.
Who was a former Perry guy? Is that right?
He's a former Perry staffer. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's run a couple of races. He lost to Jim Murphy and then moved to Katy for this.
Right,
there was
but
a carpetbagger
Fabby
thing.
Lost. EB lost. There were a bunch of them who.
Right.
But so why would the phenomenon stop at the Senate?
I think there was a lot of campaigning on the House side that didn't happen on the Senate side. The House was trying to, you know, you have a speaker and a speaker's crew, a leadership team that's trying to, you know, preserve their leadership and to preserve, defend their guys and hold this thing together. And they did they had mixed results. We disagreed on that in the March primary. They had mixed results in the primary. I think they split with the Empower Texans and those guys. In this one, they clearly won.
So if the Republicans hold these seats in November, I mean, you're establishing a very different vibe in the Senate versus the House, correct?
Yeah, we get up to eight new senators, depending on, you know, how a couple of races go, you know, if Glenn Hager wins and somebody, you know, runs for his seat, all of that kind of stuff. So about 8 senators. We had 6 new senators in the last cycle. This group of, you know, 12 to 14, depending on how it comes out, is markedly more conservative than the people they replaced, right, even when it's Republican for Republican. Mm-hmm. And if Dan Patrick is the leader of the Senate, if he beats Letitia Vanderpoot, you have a remarkably more conservative Senate.
Look at the group that you've got in the last 2 cycles. Hancock, Taylor, Schwertner, Campbell, and then presuming things for the fall.
So many footnotes.
Van Taylor, Betancourt.
Those are all senators.
Right. Van Taylor, Paul Betancourt, potentially Charles Perry, Brandon Creighton or Steve Toth, a significant number of clicks to the right of Tommy Williams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the Democrats spending all this time
Connie
saying,
Burton,
you know,
if she beats Libby Willis.
The tide's going to turn. You know, this legislature just keeps, or the Senate at least, just keeps getting more and more conservative.
Basically, the Senate will be this. It'll be 11 Democrats. It'll be the 2 former mayors, both pragmatists by disposition. When they were nonpartisan mayors of their cities, they had to get things done and are perceived by their fellow Republicans as being insufficiently conservative, Eltife and Seliger. And then it'll be 18 Katy bar the door conservatives. I can whip the votes on the 2/3 rule. Dead.
Well, the 2/3 rule was dead no matter who got elected because all 4 of the lieutenant governor candidates
But at this point now, the votes to kill the 2/3 rule are – I mean, any question about whether the votes are there, totally there, right?
Right.
It is a much more – and I have a question about what the agenda is.
Well,
so where do they go? So let's assume the Senate is as conservative as we assume. What, are they going to ban abortion in 20 minutes? I mean, what are they going to do?
Well, I don't know.
What else is on the agenda? I'd like to know what the list of things is, and I'm waiting to hear.
The issue in this legislature, if those guys all prevail, this is actually sets up the counterargument for Letitia Vanderpuy. We can come back to that. But if they do this, the question is with a House that is, you know, has taken a turn in the last cycle, certainly maybe the last two cycles, toward sort of nonpartisan problems like infrastructure, water, those kinds of things, and a Senate that looks more and more partisan, you know, what kind of an agenda can a new governor get through this thing? What kind of an agenda can a new lieutenant governor get through this thing? You know, Joe Strauss seems to be the rock in the river that everything flows around.
Is he the last centrist?
Well, you know, maybe not. I mean, we don't know what Greg Abbott's going to come in and propose when he comes in. You know, you frankly don't know until they get there and actually say it, what, after an election, a Dan Patrick or a Letitia Vanderpuy wants out of this legislature. They may come in and say, you know, really what we ought to talk about is, you know, schools.
You heard Dan Patrick last night already saying, you know, no Democratic chairs. You know, I mean, this doesn't sound like
I don't think he said none, did he? Mm-hmm.
He said it won't be half.
It sounded pretty darn
this
close.
This is the ongoing fight.
This is the ongoing,
right.
Whether certainly or not fewer. He said this, but certainly fewer.
He also said that it was a clear mandate to lower property taxes, yes, which I did not realize had been an issue in his race against Dan. David Dewhurst.
He talked about it, or he tweeted about it, or others tweeted on his behalf about it repeatedly during the campaign.
So he's either going to raise state spending on public education or cut public education, because that's the only two ways to lower property taxes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're just going to have, if he is indeed the lieutenant governor, it's just going to be a massive bottleneck. I mean, I cannot imagine that this legislature is going to get anything done. I feel like we're going to be coming back for special session after special session, depending on whoever this governor is, but probably Greg Abbott.
So this sets up the argument that Letitia Vanderpuy and Wendy Davis are making, that, you know, that Dan Patrick is exactly the kind of candidate that they wanted to push up against. This is a sharp contrast between if you vote for this one, you get that. If you vote for, you know, that one, you get the other thing. It's a really remarkable difference that voters are going to be looking at. If the voters were interested at all, and there's no evidence that they are, fewer than a million people voted in this runoff.
But you've said, Ross, to me a couple times, and even on this podcast, I'm pretty sure, that you thought—
You're going to hold me to things I've said on the podcast.
That Dewhurst was a more— a delectable opponent for Vanderpuy in the sense that you just run against incompetence in the last couple sessions and you didn't like it. Here's the guy who was responsible for it. I actually think Patrick is high risk, high reward for Vanderpuy. If they regard him as an IED, much as you might see in a war zone, and they drive by him at the right speed, he goes off. They think that the collateral damage actually affects every Republican on the ballot. Patrick has been very good, though, about keeping control of himself.
This is the first time I've ever worked with anybody whose analogies are weirder than mine.
Well, but
boy, and yours are pretty weird. Turnip truck.
But what they're trying to do is try to get Patrick to explode and have Patrick be a problem for the entire Republican ticket, or at a minimum, create an opportunity for Vanderpuy where he disqualifies himself. I think the likelihood of that is not very high.
Right.
But ideologically, the question is, do people in the state see Vanderpuy as more like them or Patrick as more like them? And at the moment, based on every other election that's taken place, how do you not view Patrick's view of the world ideologically as more in sync with Texas?
Right.
Where is the evidence that the Democratic ideology is in the majority? It's just not there.
You know, they didn't have as many races, but only 20% of the turnout in the runoff, only 20% of the turnout was Democratic. Now, they didn't have the races the Republicans did, but they were only about a third of the turnout in March. Mm-hmm. They don't have the numbers here yet, or evidence of the numbers here, to really be a serious existential threat to the Republicans. So the Republicans feel safe running more and more and more Republicans.
It may materialize that the Democratic ideology has more traction than we know now, between now and November. But if you're the Patrick guys, you're thinking, I'm in sync with the rest of the state.
Right. And her path forward would have to be, I mean, the tack they've taken so far, you know, focusing on this Patrick's illegal invasion comments. You know, I mean, I think they would have to find some turnout among people who have not traditionally voted in this state. You know, that's a really uphill battle.
Yeah, they're called unlikely voters for a reason.
Right.
Well, how much further do you think they're likely to extend some of the nastiness that came up at the end of the Dewhurst Patrick?
Oh, you mean, do you think mental health and suicide and all that sort of stuff is going to come up again in the fall? Yes.
Well, I don't know.
Carefully.
I think a lot of the reason that stuff came up in the primaries was because the differences between the candidates on issues were so slight. Mm-hmm. And so, you can't talk about this or that. Let's talk about qualifications. In the general election, the differences on issues and on ideology are really, really stark. I don't know that you need to go to competence.
It's absolutely going to come up.
What about in the attorney general's race? You referenced Paxton's legal issues earlier. Maybe you want to.
It's the only chance that Sam Houston has. Nobody knows who he is. Ken Herman had a funny line in his column this morning that I think the guy running for the Democratic as the Democratic Attorney General is 221 years old. I mean, the only thing he's really got going is his name.
His name, yeah.
Well, that's all Jim Hogan had. Exactly. Look at him
but
riding high.
We're going to hear about the runaway scrape, actually, right. quite a lot for the next few months.
But, you know, if you if Houston picks up the Dan Branch line that the Attorney General ought to follow the law, and if Ken Paxton can't get his foot out of this trap, then I think that's going to be the issue going into November.
Right. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if anybody takes up the Ken Paxton, you know, legal issue. I mean, you know, it doesn't look likely right now that he's facing prosecution, although I suppose it's possible.
Well, it sounds like it just sounds like a campaign allegation at this point until you see the guy walking around in, you know, orange.
The big dispute that came up in the last week, and we, in some respects, were party to this. We published pieces by both Paxton and Branch. A couple days before the election is Paxton able to argue before the Supreme Court? Is he authorized to represent the state under his current circumstances before the Supreme Court?
He says yes.
Branch says no. He says yes. Houston can make the argument this guy is not able to be the state's top lawyer because of his troubles. He's not.
Well, actually,
but you know what? People didn't seem to care.
The actual job.
I just don't know that you can make the argument. Is it an argument that gets trapped? People go, they go, securities reprimand. Oh, those are big words. Ow, my head hurts. You know, they don't. People don't think that they care about that stuff, right? I mean, isn't that what happened? Kind of nobody cared.
Well, I'm not sure enough people knew about it. And that's the question. Do the people who made the decisions know about it? And do the people who knew about it care?
I think the Republican
primary voters, the Republican primary runoff voters, obviously did know about it because they got a lot of mail and obviously didn't care because they gave this guy 2/3 of the votes. What happens in November is kind of an open thing, but I also think that's the only avenue open to Houston in that race.
But what are the odds of any moderate Republicans actually switching sides and voting for Democrats? You know, even David Dewhurst, who ran a nasty campaign against Dan Patrick very quickly last night, said, I will do anything to help the Republicans.
Well, in the lieutenant governor's race, there'll be a few, right?
Yeah.
Well, they'll rally behind the party. The party has its convention next week.
Yes, June 5th and 6th.
And they'll, you know, that's their reunification party. That's when they get together and everybody sings Kumbaya and they put their arms around each other and go to November.
David Dewhurst enters for his big kind of farewell speech at the convention with some kind of like, you know, disco track behind him.
So what's he going to do?
I like that ad. What? The David Dewhurst disco ad was the closer.
David Dewhurst disco.
Right? I think the winner of the lieutenant, the real winner other than Dan Patrick of the lieutenant governor's race was David Dewhurst's videographer. Put out some very memorable ads.
Yeah, they did some art films.
Yeah. It didn't win them the election at all. But
maybe some Emmys or some Pollys
are
ahead, right?
Webbies. No, I want to know what you think David Dewhurst will do next, Ross.
Go be rich.
He had thought of that before being lieutenant governor.
You know, I think he probably turns up. You know, I wouldn't be surprised at all to, and this is without having talked to him yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if he turns up either in some kind of think tank or behind some kind of project that has some public purpose, some civic purpose.
Chancellor of UT Austin?
I doubt that.
UT system?
I doubt that. Yeah. But, listen, I mean, you could see him jumping into.
We know he feels emotionally about the University of Texas.
Yeah.
So.
And he got a little bit clipped.
Judy Zaffarini might
you,
push
Chancellor
for
Chancellor Dewhurst. No, she'd be totally for
I
it.
Know.
Wouldn't she? Be a consolation prize.
Be fun to write about, Reeve.
Yeah. Well,
I've never seen your face fall as far as it just did. We'll take a moment while you pick up your features.
Fell 6 feet, 5 inches. How about that?
How surprised were you guys by the dual loss?
I thought he would pull this out. You know, he was above 40.
Close.
He was above 47% in the first round. He almost won it. Last night it came down to Dallas County. He won all but one of the other counties, and then Dallas County was the last one out. And he went into Dallas County's, into the last counts, down 200 votes. He lost by about 300. He lost by exactly 300 votes.
It is just amazing to look at him and see somebody who's been painted as not conservative, you know, by his opponents. I mean, this guy, you know,
wasn't
is out
he defunding Planned Parenthood before that was
been,
cool.
Oh, way before it was cool.
Right.
I mean, he's been the one trying to, you know, change the abortion regulations, to really change the funding structure, to rewrite, you know, the rules behind the scenes to make sure this funding couldn't go to Planned Parenthood clinics. I mean, this guy to be considered not conservative is wild.
Well, how much of modern conservatism is what you actually say and how much of it is just how you say it?
And at what point, you know, how long do you have to be in before you're no longer considered?
Well, part of this, too, is, you know, it wasn't so much, you know, in some ways it was about the conservative liberal thing, but in a lot of ways it was about he'd been there long enough that he's an incumbent in all the wrong ways, you know, that well, you were there when all this went wrong. We need somebody new.
Therefore, you're responsible for it.
Right.
Someone texted me this morning on the Republican side and said, it's official. The most powerful person in the state of Texas is now Tim Dunn, the funder of the Empower Texans, Texans for Fiscal Responsibility, kind of that whole coterie of things. And in a lot of ways, those people, as much as you're not wrong about the House races.
Yeah, wow. That's the nicest thing Evan's ever said to Ross.
The fact is... It was a very good night for that end of the spectrum.
It was at the top of the ballot.
It wasn't quite the bloodbath that I think March was, but I think it was a continuation of the trend in that direction. And Dewell was a casualty of that. I think the interesting question to turn around is, who is Bob Hall?
Right.
Relative to a number of the other people who we have seen elected over the last couple of cycles. Donna Campbell, Connie Burton, people who came from that end of the party with that spectrum's end of the spectrum support.
Right.
Bob Hall is a mystery to a lot of people. We don't know much about him.
Connie Burton's sort of a classic political story. I mean, she built an organization that's you can kind of see this thing working through the grassroots.
And you know,
it's
she
not
worked
fake
her,
grassroots. Bob Hall's kind of a fake grassroots program.
She worked her tail
off.
If you're going to say anything about Connie Burton, that woman has been savvy. She's been all over the place. You know, her social media presence, basically before anybody else had one, was huge.
Right.
She was really, really aggressive. She went after Wendy Davis on abortion stuff really early. I mean, that woman worked. I didn't see Mark Shelton hardly at all on the campaign trail.
Right. Connie Burton kind of won old school.
You know, as we've been sitting in here, Wayne Christian just released a statement on his loss. And it said, sometimes the ball bounces your way, sometimes it does not.
It doesn't say, I thought I was part of the slate.
Right.
What happened, guys?
He wishes Mr. Sitton luck. So he said, unfortunately, we were outspent and unable to overcome our financial disadvantage.
I still wonder if anyone remembers Wayne Christian's famous speech
about pansexuals?
Yeah, that
I
speech.
I haven't forgotten.
And the one where he talked about how he had suffered racism because he wasn't allowed to start on his high school basketball team. Which is my favorite thing I've ever seen in the Texas legislature.
No jump shot.
Who are we talking about?
Which one of these people do we want to talk about?
Yeah, what else was surprising? I was sort of surprised that David Alamiel was able to pull it out, given that they couldn't get Friedman over the edge there.
You know, he only got 72% or something like that?
Only 72.
Yeah, I think they pretty much rejected...
How many times has Tisha Rogers?
You know, only 193,000 Democrats voted statewide. It's less than a mayor's race in one of the big cities. It's just, you know, you wonder if the primaries and if the primary runoffs in particular are representative of any group of Texans at all. I mean, is this the way everybody would vote if everybody was there? There's 780,000, 740,000 Republicans. There are 190,000 Democrats. That's it.
Do you think the Wendy Davis
is... Well, in fairness, though, you could argue that there were no... That you just had the Senate race and the ag race on the ballot. There wasn't a whole lot of motivation to turn out.
Yeah, but still, it just blows. It's really ridiculous. Texans hate democracy, apparently.
That's a scientific term.
Well, and how are people supposed to take them seriously if they can't... If they won't even show up and, you know, it's...
It wasn't going to take long to vote. You just go in and hit two buttons.
Both the Republicans and the Democrats were pathetic in both May and March. They're just... These are niche... This is a niche business. It's not mass marketing anymore.
Do we think that Wendy Davis's upcoming autobiography will generate any excitement?
Not unless they change the font on the cover.
What's with the font? I don't get why everybody's upset about the font.
It's like Helvetica. It is the worst. It looks like a Microsoft Word, like, you know, seventh grade book report.
Mr. Paperclip?
Basically.
I see you're writing an autobiography.
This message brought to you by the committee... to like journalists. I mean, you guys, what are you whining about?
You started this podcast by calling one of the candidates a creep.
No, I said he creeped people out. That's different. I would never call somebody
17 years of magazine covers and you're griping at us about fonts.
Just to be clear, every time the font changes like one pixel on the Texas Tribune, Evan has an aneurysm.
Privately.
So, this is what happens when you have a late election night and everyone comes into the office next day and they're all just sniping at each other.
Late? It was over at 7:02. What are you talking about?
That's late.
Privately, I would snipe about the font. Publicly, I love the font.
What about the title, Forgetting to Be Afraid?
What's she forgetting to be afraid
of?
Just
can't wait for Abbott's attack ad that says, do we want a governor this forgetful?
Abbott's memoir will be called Remembering to Be Confident.
Fear you can remember.
Oh, boy.
Does anybody read these? Political biographies are sort of weird. I mean, you know, Perry's written a couple of them now, right? And, you know, I guess we're going to get another one if he runs
again. When's hers going to come out in September? Fed her upper. And then who's going to be doing the fact-checking on? You can bet they're paying that fact-checker a lot of money with Wendy Davis' book.
Which, the publisher or the Abbott campaign?
Both.
Right.
Probably. Because maybe it's the same person.
Well, it gives you an excuse for a book tour, right? That's the whole point.
Yeah, because nobody's paying attention to you otherwise.
It gives you an excuse to make money.
Right.
Which we could all use.
Right.
If you have questions or comments and you'd like to send them to us.
Or money.
Carefully choose your font and then email it to tribcast@texastribune.org. We'd like to thank Shiny Ribs for doing our music. And on behalf of Emily, Ross, Evan, and our producer Todd, we would like to encourage you to review us on iTunes. This is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
Three sure things in life: death, taxes, and Todd being weird.